You're driving the speed limit on the interstate highway. You're in the right lane, and this black SUV comes right up behind you, so close that you can't really see the grill, but all you can see is the face of the driver whose mouth is moving. And you can't actually hear what this driver is saying, but you can estimate the tone of what's going on. And so you decide, slow down, let him pass, which just angers him all the more. So now it didn't seem possible. He's even closer than he was before. So you decide what you should do is just speed up. You know that you're going 15, 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, but now so is he. Now you're going 20 miles over the speed limit together, almost bumper to bumper. And when you look in your rearview mirror, not only is his mouth moving, but he's gesturing at you as well. And your heart starts to pump. Your hypothalamus kicks in, your nervous and endocrine system. Your heart rate is faster, your pulse, your oxygen consumption, your blood pressure. Your brain and your body are telling you that you have two basic choices, fight or flight. And you've got to decide what you're going to do. Now, I have some possibilities for you to consider. Like hit your brakes really hard because you observe that this guy's car is worth a whole lot more than yours. He's apparently got some money. This is an opportunity to get a new car. And you can say, there was a deer. I'm sure I saw a deer somewhere. Or choice number two, you could just pull over and hope that he pulls over as well and that there'll be a fight because you've invested 2.5 years into karate lessons. And you've never actually had a real on-the-street opportunity to use what you've learned. Or you could take your cell phone and dial 911 and report to the police that a drunk driver is out there trying to kill you. Or you could just pull off and go home and forget about the whole thing. Now, there are some people who like a fight. That's kind of the definition of a really good day, when there's been a fight that has been your opportunity. But all of us have to choose whether the fight is really worth the conflict. And that's the way it was with David, around 1,000 years before the birth of Jesus Christ in Old Testament Israel. David was a fugitive. King Saul had put a price on his head. David wanted dead or alive, preferably dead. It was all part of Saul's downward spiral from being a spirit-filled leader to a king who was increasingly distanced from God and sinning. The king was against David, but God was for David. God would repeatedly rescue him from the bad situations that King Saul forced him into. God was obviously preserving him and obviously on his side. But after a long time, David and the 600 men in his ragtag army were weary of always hiding, of always having to scavenge for food, of always putting their families in harm's way. And so David made a daring leadership decision. He decided to take his army and all of their families and cross the border out of Israel over into the enemy territory of Philistia and subject themselves to the Philistine king Achish. David then played a dangerous game of deception with the Philistines. They, of course, were suspicious of him, and they would give him instructions to go out and raid the towns of Israel. What David would do would be to take his men and go farther away out of the network of Philistia and go to the people of other tribes and nations and fight with them or raid their villages. And then when they would come back, they would report victories and they would return loot, although they had never actually attacked Israel. And the people of Philistia assumed that they had and that their loyalty had switched over to the Philistines. Now, this all worked for about a year. But after a year, the leaders of Philistia were getting ready for a major cataclysmic battle against the nation of Israel that was to take place in the Valley of Jezreel. The Philistines had a marked advantage going into this battle. They had a larger army, they had better equipment, they had more experience, and they were an army that had invested a lot into chariots, and chariots were a formidable weapon out on flat land, while largely useless in the mountains where previous battles had taken place. And King Achish fully expected that David would fight on the side of Philistia against Israel, which put David in a seemingly impossible dilemma. Was he really going to fight against his own blood, against his own countrymen? Was he really going to go into battle and slaughter fellow Jews? But if he didn't, there were thousands of Philistines who would quickly recognize that he wasn't on their side, and he and his 600 soldiers would be slaughtered. They might put up a quick fight, but it wouldn't last for very long. He was in an impossible dilemma, which some of us get ourselves into. We make a decision and we start down a path that at the time seems like a really good idea, only to discover that we've gotten ourselves into a trap that we can't get out of. We can't go back. There's no doing of that, but we can't go forward either. Every alternative doesn't work. There are no good alternatives available to us. You signed up for a course because you thought this was one that you could ace, only to discover that now you're failing the course and you have to have it to graduate. Or you've gotten into a marriage that seemed to have great romantic promise for the rest of your life, but now the marriage is miserable and you can't back out of it and you don't believe in divorce. Or you've invested way too much of your money into something that has gone completely south, and if you sell off now, there's no chance for recovery, but you might actually lose the little that you have left. So go right, go left, go forward, go back. None of it is a good alternative. The battle lines were drawn, and David was stuck. But remember that God was on David's side, that God had this supernatural way of rescuing him from impossible situations. Certainly, St. Paul knew the story of David and the dilemma that he was in when he wrote words that every Christian should read, perhaps memorize, and often recite. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, that no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, when you are in a seemingly impossible dilemma, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. So how was God going to get David out of the mess that he was in? The story is in the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel, chapter 29. The Philistines gathered all their forces at Aphek, and Israel camped by the spring in Jezreel. As the Philistine rulers marched with their units of hundreds and thousands, David and his men were marching at the rear with Achish. The commanders of the Philistines asked, "What about these Hebrews?" Achish replied, "Is this not David who was an officer of Saul, king of Israel? He has already been with me for over a year, and from the day he left Saul until now, I have found no fault in him." But the Philistine commanders were angry with him and said, "Send the man back that he may return to the place you assigned him. He must not go with us into battle or he will turn against us during the fighting. How better could he regain his master's favor than by taking the heads of our own men? Isn't this the David they sang about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands of Philistines. This is the guy that has killed so many of our soldiers." Now, it was Achish who had a problem, and he was in a dilemma. He really liked David. He felt a bond with him. He knew that David was the most potent weapon in the army of Israel or of Philistia, and he wanted David on his team and not on Israel's team. So, I don't know, what do you compare that to? I was just thinking maybe like Brett Favre, you know, and the Packers and the Vikings and, you know, which team and which side. Well, we now know something that was at the time unknown to the Philistines and to the Israelites. And that was that David was absolutely loyal to Yahweh, the God of Israel, and to God's chosen people of Israel. The most common worldview in those days was a worldview of multiple gods, polytheism. It was, and to those that hold it today, an extremely difficult worldview. Because while we live in a context where the general worldview is either that everything happens according to God's will or that everything happens according to the laws of science, there is a predictability and a dependability. But those who are polytheists don't have that. It is a chaotic world because gods are unpredictable and they do capricious things. They involve humans in decisions and sometimes are in competition, terribly inconsistent. And so you worry all the time about how your God is going to respond to a specific situation. Also, in those days, every tribe, every nation had its own gods. And battles were really primarily wars between the gods. So you never wanted to go into a battle and not have your God show up. And that meant that in advance you would do all kinds of prayers and sacrifices and worship in order to make your God stronger and present and powerful in whatever battle you were going to face. But David had a completely different worldview. And that was that his God, the God of Israel, Yahweh, they called him, was the God of the heavens and the earth. That he was the God over absolutely everything and everyone. And therefore, David was fiercely loyal to his God and to his God's nation. As we have and as we will study the biography of David, it's pretty obvious that he did a lot of stupid and sinful things. Sometimes I read his story and I'm embarrassed that the Bible refers to him as a man of God when some of his behavior was so wicked. However, we have to acknowledge that in his lifetime, he never wavered in his faith and loyalty to the one true God. Behaved inconsistently, but never wavered in that loyalty. And so there is no way that he was ever going to fight for the God or the gods of the Philistines against the true God. But this was a really important battle. Really important. The most important battle to date in David's lifetime. There were thousands of lives that were at stake. This would affect whole generations for years to come. And David was perfectly positioned. He was at the rear of the Philistine army, which meant that once the battle began, he could attack from a rear flank. He could slaughter soldiers, even in chariots, who were facing the other direction. He could determine the outcome of this battle, a battle that otherwise would go against Israel. But with David and his men, he could determine the outcome and give a victory to Israel. So Achish called David and said to him, "As surely as the Lord lives, you have been reliable, and I would be pleased to have you serve with me in the army. From the day you came to me until now, I have found no fault in you. But the rulers don't approve of you. So turn back and go in peace. Do nothing to displease the Philistine rulers." "What have I done?" asked David. "What have you found against your servant from the day I came to you until now? Why can't I go and fight against the enemies of my lord, the king?" Achish answered, "I know that you have been as pleasing in my eyes as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the Philistine commanders have said he must not go up with us into battle. Now get up early along with your master's servants who have come with you and leave in the morning as soon as it is light." And so David and his men got up early in the morning to go back to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. King Achish seems to me to be like a really nice guy. I kind of like him, although he was stunningly naive. He just went along kind of with everything that everybody said and often was not particularly perceptive. In this instance, he decides to heed the advice of the Philistine generals and muster David out of the army. He wanted to do this in a way that wouldn't totally alienate David because he certainly didn't want him going over to the other side and fighting on behalf of Israel. David protests this mustering out of the Philistine army, although, you know, he does it with not too much force because he surely had to recognize that this was an escape, a God-given escape from the dilemma that he was in. So he asks what he's done wrong, knowing full well that this is this opportunity for escape. And then David asks, why can't I go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? David was just a master with words because he doesn't name anybody. So you really don't know who he's referring to as my lord the king or who the enemies are. And Achish assumes that he is the king that David is loyal to, and the enemy is Israel. But by contrast, David very well could have, and I think did, mean that Saul was his king and the Philistines, including Achish, were his enemy. You could read it either way. It causes me to recall a time when I was involved in hiring someone, and we were going through a vetting process, and I read a reference letter. And the person giving the reference wrote eloquently, I can't say too many good things about this person. And I read that and thought, well, that's marvelous. I mean, it's a small piece of paper and there's so many good things, he just can't get them all on this piece of paper. And I read it again and I thought, that's not what he's saying at all. He's saying he can't think of one good thing to say about this person. And so he said, I can't think of too many good things to say about him. It was a really slick way of giving a reference that I have kept in mind ever since that time. So David was loyal to Yahweh, to Israel, to King Saul. But it sounded like he might be loyal to the gods of the Philistines and to Philistia and to King Achish. David was a clever talker. So Achish told him to get out of town, to leave at dawn, to sort of close the door behind them, not to delay. And so David and his men got up early in the morning to go back to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. And David walked away from the most important battle to date in his life. He was a fighter. He was a soldier. This is what he did. He was the best fighter his country had. He was perfectly positioned. He could determine the outcome of this battle for God and for Israel. He could save the lives of his countrymen. If ever there was a battle for David to fight, this was the battle at Jezreel. But this was not David's battle to fight. I once went to a conference in Washington where one of the speakers was Richard Halverson, who was then the chaplain of the United States Senate. And Chaplain Halverson told a story. It's a story about a prize fighter, a boxer, who was doing really well and was sort of climbing the ladder to maybe someday be a potential champion in his weight class. Things were going exceptionally well when the manager of this fighter got an invitation for him to have a bout with a better known and more prominent fighter. But he declined. And when the manager was asked, Richard Halverson explained, when the manager was asked why he declined, he responded by saying, my boxer only has so many fights in him, and this is not to be his fight. The point, I think, is obvious, that we all have only a limited number of fights in us. We can't fight every battle, even if it's a good battle, even if it's an important battle. We just can't do it all, because if we take on every battle, we will eventually fail and we will destroy ourselves in the process. And so with wisdom that came from God, David walked away from the big battle. He had only so many fights in him, and this wasn't going to be one of them. As David walked away, I can't help but wonder if his mind drifted back to when he was a younger man, fighting his first battle. That day, the armies of Philistia and Israel were also lined up against each other, not for a slaughter in hand-to-hand combat, but in a competition between two champions. Back in that day, Philistia also had a bigger and better army. They also had a bigger and better champion, a giant named Goliath, who every day would shout out his profanity against David's beloved God. The Philistines had everything bigger and better, and David, as he walked away, perhaps remembered the words that he had spoken. David said to that Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." There are some battles that God calls us to fight, even when it's up against a giant. And there are some battles that God calls us to walk from, even when it seems like we have a sure victory to expect. Like David, we need to believe that the outcome of the battle is God's to determine, that it's not dependent upon us and what we can do, that he can win with or without us, and that the ultimate outcome is God's. So what are your battles? Because everybody has them. Some of them are formidable, some are winnable, and some seem not to be. They come in all kinds of sizes and shapes. There are personal battles and there are political battles, money battles and health battles and relationship battles, and school battles and neighborhood battles. You can't fight them all because you only have so many fights in you. You just can't fight every battle, and so you need to choose your battles wisely. Don't be afraid to fight, but don't be afraid to walk away either. And never think that the outcome of the battle is dependent on how smart you are or how rich or powerful or the position that you hold. It's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. God, we're all looking at battles. They're going to come this week. Some of them are going to take us by total ambush, and others have been on our calendar for a long time, and we've been worried about them. God, give to us supernatural wisdom to know when we should stand and fight, even if it's against a giant. And help us also know, even when we should turn and run from a battle that it seems that we could easily win. And whether we stand and fight or walk away, whether we say that this is the fight you want us to take, or this is the one that goes beyond the limit of the battles that are in us, help us to always remember that it is your battle, that the outcome is yours to say and yours to determine, that our faith is that the battle is the Lord's. Amen.